Welcome to the East Surrey Bump to Birth podcast, hosted by myself, Emma, and my wonderful friend, Becca. This podcast is dedicated to parents-to-be and new families in the East Surrey area, providing a wealth of knowledge and support through the exciting journey of pregnancy and birth.
Join us as we discuss everything from prenatal care and childbirth education to navigating the challenges of life with a new baby. We'll be joined by guest expert speakers, including midwives, doulas, breastfeeding experts, nutritionists, and more, who will share their insights and expertise to help you make informed decisions and feel confident in your choices.
Whether you're a first-time parent or a seasoned pro, the East Surrey Bump to Birth podcast has something for everyone. With a focus on empowering parents, we will help you feel calm, confident, and supported through your pregnancy and birth journey. So tune in and get ready to be inspired. Hello, hello.
Hi, Emma. How's it going?
I'm very good. Thank you, Becca. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. We're approaching half term.
We are again.
So we're going to have to think about half term activities, aren't we? The mayhem of half term.
In the rain and
I know. Yeah. Heat wave is gone.
It has indeed. But it's all autumn and cozy and Halloween. Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Exactly. And like we've autumn. Got both of our children have got birthdays this week.
It's a busy birthday week. I'm midway through baking cakes as we speak.
Well, you're better than me. I'll probably go to M&S and get Colin the Caterpillar, probably.
Cannot go wrong with a Colin. Cannot go wrong with Colin. Right, so today we are talking birth partners again. So a little while ago we did an episode about how birth partners can help prepare for labour and little tips for them there. Mm-hmm. And today we're thinking we're going to talk about tips for the birth partners during labour itself.
Yes, because I think a lot of the time, especially for dads when obviously they go to antenatal classes with mum, I think a lot of time in the back of their heads they're thinking, What am I going to be doing during labour? What is my role during labour? And how can I help my partner while she's in labour? So we're going to share plenty of tips around that on, how birth partners can support.
Yeah, so if you haven't already listened to the preparing for labour one, go back and listen to that first. There are lots of helpful bits of information there. You need to know that first and then come on to this one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with one that is really simple and seems really obvious, but I think isn't. And that is eating and drinking.
Yeah.
For both of you. For mum, it is really important. And I also think this is a big misconception because the maternity systems are very different here to America. And the reality is, if we all type things into Google, we do get a lot of American websites come up and a lot of videos and things like that.
Yeah.
In the UK, you can eat and drink during labour.
Yeah.
And we actively encourage it. Because if you think about it, you are in for a long haul. You are basically doing a marathon. You would never go run a marathon without adequate nutrition and hydration.
Absolutely.
It is exactly the same for labour. America is a whole different thing. You're kneeled by mouth. So just ignore the internet if you see that you're not allowed to eat and drink in labour. So prepare for that. Have things with you.
Snacks.
Little, small, they don't even have to be particularly nutritious snacks. Really energy dense. You can go down the nutritious route with like fancy like nut-based energy balls and things like that. Or you can do what I did, which was jelly babies.
Because it was fruit pastels for me.
See, loads of sugar.
All the sugar.
It's going to give you that boost you need. But birth partners, your partner isn't necessarily going to go, oh, I'm hungry. Because her body's doing a lot. Those kind of instincts dip down a little bit. She might not be thinking about it. So offer them regularly. Have a bottle that you just casually slip in front of her every now and again. Encourage her to take a few sips. Stick the packet of, you know, something nutritious or sugary in front of her once in a while.
Bit of both. You could have something nutritious, you know, healthy and not healthy. So some people like bananas because they're really good energy. And then, like I said, sweets.
Things like Lucozade.
Anything with sugar in it. And also a really good tip is the straw, isn't it? Putting the straw in the drink. Because obviously if your mum's concentrating on her breathing, you don't necessarily want to keep putting a bottle up to your mouth. So having a straw to suck through is a really good tip.
Yeah, I always recommend that. Really and good also tip. Have food and drink for yourself as the partner there.
Absolutely.
You are also going to be there for a fair amount of time. And the likelihood is, especially once your partner is in active labour, whether that be at home with a home birth or particularly if you're going to the hospital, you're not going to be wanting to go and find the nearest vending machine or the cafe when she is in full-blown active labour. You're going to be scared that you're going to miss something, and also she's going to want your support there. So make sure in that hospital bag, have your own hospital bag full of snacks and drinks for yourself, because quite frankly, there is no place for a hangry birth partner in a birth room. You're not going to be helpful.
Absolutely.
Look after yourself.
Because your energy levels are going to drop as well. If you don't have food and drink yourself, you're going to feel fatigue and, like Emma says, feel a bit moody and ratty because you haven't eaten, and you're not going to be able to support mum if you're feeling like that. So your energy levels are just as important as mum's, really, to keep her going.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
Seems simple. It will make a difference to both of you,
I just thought of as well, obviously when women are pregnant, there are certain foods and smells that they can't stand even throughout any trimester. So if there's a food that you know mum absolutely hates or makes her gag or can't stand the smell of, maybe don't pack that in the bag.
Yeah, be mindful. Don't pack your pickled onion monster munch or anything like that.
Or in my case, my husband loves Marmite. But I can't stand it. Mm-hmm. So for him, the perfect snack probably would have been Marmite crisps or Marmite on sandwich or something. But for me, it was like, please don't bring Marmite in, because the smell and the look of it just makes me feel, ugh.
Yeah, something unoffensive, please.
So yeah, mindful of wash. Yeah,
very
well.
Good point.
So yes, that's very important. Keeping mum nourished and you nourished as well. Very good tip.
Go on, Becca, what tip have you got?
Well, I thought, the other thing, when we talked about the last episode about preparing, we spoke about partners practicing the breathing techniques, which is something that you can practice all throughout pregnancy.
Yeah.
And obviously, you want to use it during labour as well. So it's really important when mum is in labour and having those surges, breathing may go a bit of a miss, because especially if she's taken back a bit by the powerfulness of the surges, sometimes you forget to breathe and do your breathing.
Yeah.
So birth partners really remind mum to do those breathing techniques.
Yeah,
and actually, it doesn't only help mum, but it helps you keep calm as well.
Absolutely.
Because if you're watching and you're getting a bit anxious or a bit stressed because you're watching mum in discomfort, and birth partners can sometimes be a bit worried, if you're doing the breathing together, it keeps you both calm. It keeps mum nice and calm during her surges, and it keeps you in a nice calm mindset. So remind mum to breathe.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean breathe as in breathe, but I mean as in the breathing techniques you would have learned together.
Well, even then, you say breathe as in breathe, but we've all stubbed our toe and had that knee-jerk reaction, which is to go, and we hold our breath and we tense up. That is our natural instinct, and that is the last thing you want your partner doing. So even if you can't get her doing the breathing technique that you know that she's learned, just encouraging her to keep breathing
is the most
basic thing. Watch her body language. Has her shoulders come up? Is she holding her breath? And just really simply coach her through what you know she knows.
Yeah.
She will have spent hours practicing this probably throughout the last few weeks of her pregnancy.
Yeah.
But it isn't necessarily going to be at the front of her mind once
that
full labour instincts and hormones have really taken over. It's your job to remember the things that she's learned antenatally, to remind her. Be the coach.
Yeah. Be her cheerleader.
Yeah.
Be her cheerleader. And like Emma says, you can see by somebody's body language if they're tensing up. So just remind her, right, nice deep breath in as we practice, in through the nose, out through the mouth. And also the whole relaxed shoulders. So relaxed shoulders and relaxed jaw helps to relax the pelvis.
Absolutely.
So if you see her tensing up or her shoulders are rising upwards, just remind her to relax her shoulders.
Definitely.
And doing the breathing. So that's a very good way that partners can support.
Yeah, and so easy as well. Yeah. You don't need to, apart from having learnt those breathing patterns as well, whatever that looks like, you don't need any fancy technique. There's no special massage, no special move. It's just simply being able to count in and out, and it will make a huge difference to her. It really will.
And and language as well. So I know a couple that I taught a while ago, she actually said to me, I don't want him just to say to me, breathe, because that will really wind me up. Because obviously, if you've got someone saying, breathe, he just makes you go, ugh. So think about how you're going to phrase it as well. So rather than just turning around and saying, right, don't forget to breathe, which might make mum a bit tense or wind her up, have like a certain phrase that you know is going to work for her. So mm-hmm. it might be, right, shall we breathe together? Or, right, let me take your hand, let's do a deep breath in through the nose.
Yeah.
And think about how you're going to phrase it. If you know that there's triggers that are going to wind her up, don't do it. So that's something that you can discuss together beforehand as well. Just say, right, what is going to wind you up and what's not going to annoy you? Give me some phrases to say and not say.
Yeah.
So if she doesn't want to hear, breathe, yeah, breathe, think about how you're going to phrase it instead.
Yeah, definitely. And also kind of on that line of what's going to annoy her, develop a thick skin. Don't take offence during labour, because the things that your partner may have spent her whole pregnancy going, oh, that sounds amazing, I really like the idea of you rubbing my shoulders, giving me a massage, having a particular scent burning, whatever it might be. But as Beck already mentioned, sometimes the things that you like in pregnancy are different. Mm. Also, sometimes the things that you like in labour are different as well.
Absolutely.
So, like, I'm quite a tactile person. I love a massage, like all of that. The honest truth is, during both of my labours, I didn't want to be touched. And we'd spent ages kind of coming up with different massage techniques and learning all of that. And actually on the day, it was a very simple, do not touch me.
Mm.
Which I think, especially my first labour, second, he expected it a bit more, I think. But the first labour, I think it was a bit of a shock to my partner. He spent all this time planning for how he was going to help me with that. And then I didn't want it. And you just, you know, nobody knows what labour, and every labour's different. Nobody knows what they're going to be like. So even if you have come up with all of these ideas, if she doesn't like it during labour, it's no, you know, reflection on you as the partner. It's not that she doesn't like what you were doing. It's not that she doesn't like you.
Yeah,
it's just that it wasn't what she needed in that moment, and don't take offence by it. Absolutely. Just move on. Try something else.
That's the thing. Try different things. Just because you thought one thing was going to work, if it doesn't, try another thing.
Exactly.
Go with her flow. She's going to know what she wants in that moment, and it might change throughout the labour.
Yeah.
And just go with her flow. If she says to you what she wants something, just go with it, exactly. You know.
So we've talked about nourishing, we've talked about breathing. Another big one is the environment. And again, this is something that you're going to plan for in pregnancy. You're going to talk this through. If your partner particularly has done something like a hypnobirthing course, she will probably have ideas about how she wants her birth environment to look.
Yeah.
And you know, we could talk for ages about the benefits of how different environments are, but the kind of Cliff Notes version is you want it to be low lighting, very cozy, very almost romantic feeling. That's the vibe you're after. It's your job when you get, particularly if you're going to the hospital to give birth. If you're having a home birth, it's a little bit easier. Those things might already be set up. If you are heading to the birth centre or the delivery suite at the hospital, when you get there, it is your job to get that room looking how you think she wants. It's not the lady in labour's job. She's got other things going on in her mind.
She's the midwife
might help you, but the midwife has obviously got jobs to be doing as well. So walk into that room, take stock of what's going on around you, and think about what you can change. So dim the lighting. There's dimmer switches in all of the rooms at East Surrey. If you're in a room with a window, lower the blind if it's daytime.
Yeah.
Get the music on, get your fairy lights out. If you've got a particular scent that you're using, get that sprayed or in a diffuser, whatever it is that you're doing. The little changes like that can make a huge difference to how a room feels. And how that room feels will make a huge difference to how your partner feels.
Absolutely.
And it's really simple. Don't feel embarrassed that you're changing things.
They want you to do it. They're actually very good at East Surrey Hospital.
They are. They're really pro this.
They're very, bring in what you need to make that room yours.
Well, in fact, they've got boxes in most of the rooms that have things like fairy lights and stuff.
And
I always still recommend bring your own, because you know it works, you know what you've got, things like that. But they are so for you doing that. They want that space to feel safe for you.
Absolutely. And we often say to people, don't we, that actually that's the first thing that you should do before anything else.
Yeah.
Because the environment is such a big factor when it comes to how you're feeling and the sort of atmosphere. Mm. So before all the other bits and pieces that we've mentioned already, yeah. get the environment right first, and then all the rest will follow.
Yeah,
so absolutely. And we've talked about this in other episodes as well, haven't we? About, so you can always listen to our other episodes where we've talked about birth environment.
Yeah.
But it's so cheap to go on Amazon, and, you know, fairy lights are next to nothing, and mood lighting is really cheap, and this... really cheap options on websites now.
You don't have to spend loads.
Affirmation cards are not very much.
You can make your own.
Or make your own.
Do your own.
Exactly. So they're really not, you know, they're not going to make you in debt.
No.
They're really cheap.
You're not having to have a really expensive setup lighting system.
No. And like you said, such small changes can really make a massive effect. For example, I did something on the weekend and we had to set up the room for a pregnancy event. And we literally, all we did, because it was a sunny afternoon, we pulled the curtain, we closed the curtains.
Mm-hmm.
So the room was nice and dark. Put the fairy lights up. We had LED candles.
Yeah, surprisingly effective in low lighting.
It was completely different.
Yeah, beautiful.
Massively different. Yeah. And we only made those really small changes.
Yeah,
and it was amazing how much it transformed it. And the reaction when women came in and was like, oh, this is nice.
Because
we had the scents going as well.
Yeah.
And it must have taken us probably not even 10 minutes to put all those bits and pieces together. So it does not take long. And that will make such a nice environment for her, won't it? Massively.
Yeah, well, and imagine the difference. Walking into, even yourself as a partner not in labour, imagine yourself walking into a hospital room. Picture how you feel in that room. You've probably been in hospital for some reason, whether it's, you know, sprained wrist even. You've probably at least been in an A&E cubicle at some point. And then picture it walking into a nice restaurant with low lighting, nice slow jazz playing in the background, a candle on your table. Think how different that vibe is. There's not that much actually that different, but that's what you want to replicate. You will walk in and instantly go, your shoulders will relax, you'll feel safe, you won't feel like a patient in a hospital room.
I think
it does make a huge difference.
That's the key you just mentioned there, a patient. When you feel like a patient, that's when you're going to tense up, and that's where women go, oh, I'm in hospital. And they almost go into that patient mode with the anxiety and the adrenaline, thinking, oh, I'm coming in for something. And that's the key word you just said there, patient.
Yeah.
If you can get from feeling like a patient to feeling like, you know, a woman about to experience something amazing, you know, you're about to go through this amazing life-changing event, and it's a positive thing, you know, it's a magical thing. And you want to go from that feeling like I've come in here to have a medical procedure to I've actually come in here to have, hopefully, a wonderful birth experience.
Yeah.
And that's the key, the language again.
Yes.
And that whole sort of feeling different, you know, making that birth environment.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. It reminds me of one of my favourite phrases about birth, which is about how birth is a normal biological event that occasionally benefits from medical intervention, not the other way around. It isn't a big medical event that sometimes magically happens naturally by itself.
So true.
When you're in that hospital, it's very easy to feel like you're there for this big medical event that you're hoping is going to go smoothly. Wrong attitude entirely.
Yeah.
You are going for a natural physiological, biological response that your body will just do, and you have chosen to be at the hospital for that, in the case that it is in that small percentage that do need that medical intervention. Aim, guard yourself, aim for that that bit that's not medical.
Yeah.
So make it feel unmedical where possible.
Exactly.
And how about other ways we can make the environment nice? How can we keep the women comfortable? Because hospitals aren't comfortable, generally speaking, apart from lighting. What else can we do?
I mean, most times of the year, hospitals are quite hot. And we know during the summer they can be very, very hot. But even in winter, they can be really hot because they haven't got the best air conditioning or ventilation in the world. So all year round, they can be quite hot places. So helping mum feel comfortable by making her feel cool while she's in there. So taking flannels with you so you can dab her on the head and the shoulders or wherever, on the arms to cool her down.
Well, what I like about a flannel is it's versatile. Dip it in cold water. You've got a nice cool thing to help cool her down. Dip it in hot water and put it on a sore spot on her back, something like
that. The lower back where the contractions are.
You've got like a hot water bottle and you just literally need to dip it into a different temperature water and it has changed instantly. They're so versatile.
Absolutely. They can make a big difference. As we know, you know, body temperature is a big thing in how comfortable you feel. So it could really help. And obviously we talk about handheld fans. You know, you get these little fans that you can hold, and some of them do have spray features on them as well, like little, you know. So even holding one of them in front of mum's face if she's feeling really hot. And you can go through a bit of a temperature change during transition. So when you get to that phase where it's nearly time to push, it's quite common for mum to get a bit of a temperature change, and you might find that she's a bit trembly because of that temperature change. So again, if you by making her feel comfortable by either cold water, warm water, the fan, anything like that, is going to help her feel more comfortable. While she goes through those changes.
And especially if she's having a water birth as well, those pools they're very strict at what temperature that pool is. It is at body temperature, which isn't, you know, a scalding hot bath. But it is actually really quite warm when you're in a warm environment and you're already feeling quite warm. It's quite normal for women to feel quite toasty in that. And again, a nice cool flannel on the forehead when the rest of her body is in a warm pool of water will really help just make her feel more comfortable in that moment.
And you see, there's plenty of pictures if you look at sort of water births. There's quite a lot of pictures where you see women with flannels around their neck or their head, or there's a fan next to them going, and you'll find plenty of pictures like that. So and again, back to the drinking, you know, especially if she's in the pool and she's quite warm, passing her a drink, having a few sips of drink just to cool her down as well. And we forgot to say, sometimes with especially during labour, I remember my lips were very dry with both of my labours. They got quite crackly and dry.
Especially if you're using gas and air as well, that's a big side
effect. So if you notice that mum's lips are looking a bit dry and look a bit starting to look a bit cracked or a bit, then you know that she's dehydrated and she needs some drink. So again, just give her a little sips and remind her to sip if you notice her lips are looking quite dry.
And as we're coming into winter as well, on the flip side of keeping the birthing woman nice and cool is, in the winter, if you are out and about in labour, whether you've just gone for a walk to keep get your contractions going, or you're making that journey from home over to the hospital if that's where you're giving birth, keeping warm is also really important. There's lots of links between how well we produce oxytocin and how warm we are. If we're really cold and uncomfortable, our body isn't comfortable, our body doesn't feel safe, we don't produce oxytocin as well. So in that, if you are exposed to the elements, just making sure you've got a nice warm layer, like if you've not got a big maternity coat, because they are expensive and you might not want one, but dressing gown, partner's hoodie, whatever it is that's going to keep you just nice and cozy and toasty during that bit. You want basically to be keeping your body temperature comfortable. You don't want to be at either extreme, because as soon as you got that kind of discomfort added, your body's just working to do so many different things.
And that's when the oxytocin drops, because you don't feel, like you say, comfortable.
Exactly.
That's a really good one. I guess the other thing as well, which is something we spoke about in the last episode when we talked about preparing for birth, birth partners really understanding the birth plan.
Yes, this is really important.
Really important, because if you both sit down and do the birth plan together and you fully understand mum's wishes, then whilst it's all happening, you know exactly what mum wants and you're able to advocate for her. So if you know there's certain things she definitely does want and definitely doesn't want, then if you are approached by a midwife with a question, or, you know, approached by somebody proposing something, if you know what's in the birth plan, you're able to say, actually, hold on, that's not in our birth plan, or yes, that is in our birth plan. Really understanding all the bits that you want is really, really important.
Understand. And I mean, we will at some point, I'm sure, do a whole episode about birth planning, because it is a huge topic. One of the things we talk about a lot in a birth plan isn't just about what do you want. It's about the why do you want it, what's the benefit, what's the risk of all the different things. And it's all well and good the person that's going to give birth knowing all of those things, but it's really important as the person supporting that you understand all those pros and cons as well. Because if the plan does change, which they can do, and hopefully in your birth planning process you've planned for changes as well. Yeah,
that's equally as important.
But knowing that, so then if you are needing to make a decision that you are hoping not to need to have to think about, you are going to be the person of more sound mind in that labour. Not that your partner in labour has lost her mind, but she's going to be distracted.
She's going to be in
the zone.
There's
a lot going on. She's going to be in that labour zone. Yeah. You need to be the person to be able to help her think through those decisions, which you've probably already talked about during pregnancy, but you will need to rediscuss them again during labour. So really already understanding what you know that she likes the idea of, what she doesn't like the idea of, and why is really going to help you help her make those decisions in a really calm, not stressful way. Because I think sometimes we do have to make decisions in labour that we weren't planning on making, and that is fine. It's being able to make that decision in a nice, calm, collected way and not having that decision process throw you off your game and drain your hormones, stress you out. So you understanding that is really important. And with that is understanding that brain's acronym.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. So this is where brains comes in. So really understanding the benefits and the risks to everything. So like you say, if you are faced with a decision, if you've looked at those benefits and risks beforehand, then you know, right, we know about this. We know to avoid it or go for it because we understand. But also the alternatives. So you may be faced with a decision where a consultant or midwife might go, you know what, things are slowing down a bit. Your contractions have slowed down. How about we try and speed things up a bit by doing X, Y, and Z? And this is where you can use your brains and say, actually, we've researched about this. We're not too keen on it. We've looked at the benefits and risks. Actually, for us, the risks outweigh the benefits. Yeah. Can we look at an alternative? Yeah. So perhaps can we get moving around? Perhaps mum can get in the bath or have a shower.
Yeah.
Changing position, getting in the, having a snack, going in the birth pool. All those things are alternatives. So it's being able to advocate for mum and saying, actually, we've talked about this during our birth prep. We've talked about this type of scenario maybe coming up, and we've looked at the benefits and risks, and we want to look at alternatives. So understanding all that.
And the reality is everything in labour comes down to consent. Has the person in labour consented to any interventions that may be happening, anything like that? And the reality is consent isn't consent unless it is informed. I could walk up to anyone in the street and say, would you like an epidural? And they could say yes or no. But unless I stood there and explained the benefits, the risks, and the alternatives, you're not making an informed decision.
Absolutely.
And it's that informedness that can really make or break whether a decision feels good or not. Even if you're making a decision that maybe you were hoping that you weren't going to need to make, or you've made a decision that was different to what you planned on in pregnancy, maybe, because, you know, we don't know what our labours are going to be like until we get there. But if you understand those benefits, those risks and those alternatives, so you've made a really informed decision, then when your baby's born and you look back on that labour, you will feel better about that decision that you made, because you will know why you made it and that you didn't just say yes or no. Blindly.
Absolutely.
And then question yourself later. It's really important in that decision making process.
And actually, you know, that's a really good point, Emma, about the informed consent. If you are faced with a decision and perhaps you don't know the benefits and the risks and alternatives, birth partners, don't be afraid to ask, especially if mum's not in a position to ask, especially if she's doing what she's doing. Don't be afraid to turn around and say, can you actually tell us the benefits, the risks and the alternative, please, before we make that decision? I think a lot of people feel when they're faced with a medical decision, they have to say yes, because all the professional is telling me, yes, I've got to do this.
Yeah.
But actually, you do have a choice. And that's what informed consent is all about. It's getting all that information before making a decision and not feeling rushed. And a lot of the time, it's, you know, unless it's a medical emergency, a lot of the time you do have time to make decisions. Yeah. We have lots of medical decisions. You do have time.
Yeah.
So don't feel like you're rushed and think, oh, if I don't make the decision in the next 5 minutes, or like I said, unless it is a real medical emergency, don't feel rushed.
No.
Actually ask, what are the benefits, risks, and are there any alternatives
before
you make that consent? And that's something that birth partners, you can do, especially if, like I say, mum's not in a position to do so. Ask on her behalf. And then when the person says, okay, I'll come back and I'll give you time to make that decision, sit there and talk with mum and say, right, this is what I've just got because I've sat there and asked. Mm-hmm. Relay it back to mum and then say, how do you feel?
Yeah, and don't be afraid to ask for that midwife, consultant, whoever it is, to give you guys some privacy whilst you have that discussion. No one wants to try and make a decision with somebody there listening to that decision-making process. You want to be able to be really honest with each other. So ask for that privacy. Can you give us 5, 10, 15 minutes to really talk? Remembering as well that if you're in the hospital in particular, your partner will be in active labour. That means she's having a contraction lasting at least a minute.
Yeah.
And then she's having a break, which is maybe 2 to 3 minutes long. And then she's got another contraction. So 10 minutes of making a decision isn't 10 minutes.
No.
It's
absolutely
sort of 3 or 4 minutes even of that might have her been having contractions. Mm. You've got to take these little snippets of conversation and fit them in between her contractions because she isn't going to be able to make listen to you even during those contractions.
Well, even actually, as I was saying, when the consultant or midwife is giving you the information, she's not going to be taking that in either. If she's concentrating on a surge, whilst they're giving all this information, a lot of it she probably won't be taking in.
No.
So this is why birth partners need to take that all in, so then they can relay it all back to mum when you're on your own and having that conversation. So that's a good point. When you're having a surge, you're not going to be taking in everything that's going in. So that's why birth partners... You take the information.
Be her ears for
Be her ears.
So you can then
relay it back.
Yeah, relay it back in privacy, where you can both be completely vulnerable and honest with each other about what it is that you do and you don't want, what it is that you hope, what it is that you fear, without... The reality is we care what other people think about us. And if we think that, oh, no, I don't want the midwife to know that I don't think this is a good idea... or whatever it is that you're thinking, you want to be able to have that conversation in privacy so that then you can feed that back to them properly afterwards.
Absolutely. And it goes back to good old oxytocin again, because as we know, oxytocin likes privacy.
Yeah.
It likes intimacy. So if you're being observed, that's one of the things we always tell people.
Yeah.
If you're being observed, the oxytocin's going to drop because you don't have that intimacy or privacy. You know, like any loving gestures, you want to do them in private.
Yeah.
It's the same with oxytocin. So if you've got someone standing there listening to everything you're saying, your oxytocin's going to go plummeting down because you're being observed. So, yeah, really important to have those conversations in private.
Yeah. So. And in those conversations as well, those remaining bits of the brain. So we said the benefits, the risks, the alternatives. The eye is the instinct.
Mm.
You will have a gut instinct already, even in pregnancy, about what you do and what you don't want.
Mm.
But also in labour, you will know what feels right and what feels wrong for you. And it may not even tally up to what you had thought pre-pregnancy. Give that instinct a voice in the conversation. It doesn't necessarily need to be the bit that makes the decision, but it's part of it, and allow that to have its space in the conversation.
Mm.
And then that N is the do nothing. So even if that is, what if we don't do anything for 10 minutes whilst we make this decision?
Yep.
Or what if we don't do something for another hour? What is the risk of us waiting another hour?
Yeah.
Can we discuss that then? Let's try these alternatives and reassess in a little while, and the majority of the time I think you will probably find that the answer will be fine. That's cool. You can wait and next. And if the answer isn't, if the answer is I'm sorry but you don't have 5 minutes to make that decision, that in itself is going to help make your decision. If you're being told that no, there isn't the time to have this conversation,
then you really know it needs to be done.
Then you know that there's something urgent happening, and that is going to inform your decision making process in itself. But often I find, and I experienced this in my first labour, you feel like a decision is urgent because you're being asked it there and you're in the unknown and you don't know what's going on and you're asked to make decisions. So it feels really urgent and you think that there's some kind of emergency going on that actually isn't as urgent as it maybe feels.
Mm.
And asking for that time and then discovering, oh, that's absolutely fine. We'll come back and talk about this in half an hour.
Yeah.
That in itself will hopefully give you that kind of reassurance to be able to go, okay, this isn't an emergency.
Yeah.
This isn't super urgent. Nobody is in immediate danger.
Yeah.
Which will give you the space to do your breathing, to calm yourself back down,
calm the system
and make that decision from a calm place, not a place of, oh my God, this is urgent.
Which is going to get the adrenaline going, and which is going to tense the body, and going to slow labour down. And you hear this so much where women have gone, oh, it was going really well, then this happened, then this problem came, well, not problem, but this incident came, or I was being told this needed to be done, and suddenly labour stalls, or suddenly everything, you know. So, absolutely, it's all about having that time and space, privacy to do it, and that calmness to do it as well. Absolutely.
Now, we've discussed quite a lot there, and I think that is actually all of our tips, really. So to kind of summarise, keep your partner comfortable, keep her feeling safe, and be her ears, and be her voice.
Be her voice, needed. Ears and voice, It's really the whole thing, really, is just making sure that she's as calm as possible, and like you say, comfortable as possible. She's in a really good mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the things to help her feel as comfortable as possible during labour.
And one quick note on the her being calm as possible. Remember that emotions are contagious. If you're in a room with somebody that is stressed, or angry, or any kind of negative emotion, you can palpably feel it in a room, and it will affect you. Be aware of the emotions that you are showing. Even if you are panicking or you feel out of your depth, do your very best to be a swan. Have the feet underneath the water, paddling in panic, but be calm on the surface so that you can help keep your partner calm through that. Showing your fear isn't going to help her in that moment. So you doing the prep work, I know this episode isn't about preparing for labour, but do the prep work when she is pregnant so that you know how to control your breathing, your emotions, your adrenaline response, so that you are able to be a calm influence for her as well. Because she'll be really vulnerable to picking up your feelings. Pick it up. Your calm vibe will help calm her. Your panicked vibe will help panic her.
Yeah. And absolutely, if picking up on that, if you feel like it is getting a bit overwhelming or thinking, okay, I need space myself, if mum's okay on her own for 5-10 minutes, then go for a walk. I've actually spoken to a couple where he said to me, I get stressed very easily and anxious very easily, and I'm not good at hiding it. I know I'm not. So one thing that we discussed was actually, if it does get a bit too much, I'm going to actually take myself out for 5 minutes. And she actually said, I'd rather you did that because it gives me 5 minutes on my own and it gives you time to calm down, rather than seeing you sitting there stressing out and making me stressed out, like you just said. Take 5-10 minutes, go down the corridor, go into the, if the hospital has a grounds, go out in the grounds for 5-10 minutes.
Lock yourself in the ensuite bathroom even, if you have to go that far away.
Yeah.
Just shut yourself absolutely in the bathroom for 5 minutes.
Oh, I know some places, I know the Surrey, I think the cafe or restaurant's only down the corridor, so she might say to you, look, I'm doing fine, I'm coping really well, go get yourself a coffee and come back in 10 minutes. Take yourself out and give yourself that bit of mental break if you feel it's getting a bit too much, because then you'll come back a calmer person, which will then rub off on her.
Definitely.
So don't feel like you've got to bottle it all up and think, oh, you know, actually take yourself out as well and give you that time.
Yeah, great advice. Brilliant.
But yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. Obviously, if you do have any questions, then give me or Emma a message and we'll be happy to divulge a bit more. But yeah, that's all our tips for birth partners, really.
It is, yeah. Right, and we will be back with another episode in the probably next couple of weeks.
After a manic half term, probably. Yes. Right. But take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in to the East Surrey Bump to Baby podcast today. If you have any topics you'd like us to cover in the upcoming episodes, please do get in touch. You can find me, Becca, at Be Your Own Birth on www.beyourownbirth.co.uk. And you can also find me on Facebook and Instagram.
And you can find me, Emma, at Calm Mama Collective, www.calmmamacollective.co.uk. And on Instagram, I am calmmama_hypnobirthing. We'll see you next time.